New on CuriosityStream, Darwin's Theory of Evolution, a scientific breakthrough, but 1920s Tennessee wasn't ready for it.
It became the Bible versus evolution.
Followed a heated trial that changed American education forever on Monkey in the Middle. And it's the country's deadliest highway.
There were something like 178 accidents in a two-year period.
Don't miss the most dangerous road in America. Watch now on CuriosityStream. Annual plans are $20, just $1.67 a month. Visit CuriosityStream.com.
Granddad's nighttime visits started when I was 13 years old. This was a few years ago now, but it only stopped fairly recently, and I still remember the first time it happened. It was the middle of the school holidays, and my mom was ill. Mom being ill wasn't something that bothered me too much at the time. It was a pretty common occurrence, something I was even used to by then. Every moment it would happen the same way. Dad would come into my room and tell me Mom wasn't feeling so good and that she'd have to go away for a while until she felt better. Then he'd drive off with her in his car and collect her a few days later. I never knew where she went, never knew what was wrong with her either. Sometimes she'd come home with scratches up her arms, but apart from that, I never saw any other symptoms. When Dad went off to collect her, I'd wait by the door for them to come back. I'd wait for her to reappear and scoop me up into her arms. "I missed you, cubby," she'd always say, planting kisses over my face. "I love you so, so much." My name's James, but as long as I can remember, Mum's called me Cubby. It's her nickname for me. Every month, the same routine, Mum getting ill, going away for a bit, then coming back as if nothing was wrong. But the summer I turned 13, things changed. The routine changed, because that was the first time I started going to stay at Granddad's. My granddad's a large man, with a white beard and a shaved head. He's from Sheffield originally, and he still has this deep, gruff northern accent. Communicates mainly in grunts. Lives on his own on the edge of the New Forest, in an old ramshackle cottage. We hardly ever saw him when I was little. And when we did, I always dreaded the visits. He scared me. I wasn't scared of him by the time I was 13, though. Or at least that's when I told myself. No, the reason I protested when Dad told me I'd be staying with Granddad this time, while Mom got better, was because I didn't want to leave the house. I wanted to stay near my friends. The kids I knew in the village would be out climbing trees and going on bike rides. If I was cooped up in my granddad's cottage, I'd be missing out. Dad was having none of it, though. He wouldn't give me a reason why I had to go, or respond to my protests. Just told me it would be good for me to spend time with my granddad. Then he bundled me into the car and we left. 45 minutes later, I was standing on the doorstep of granddad's cottage, raising my hand to knock. Dad had already driven off. I was trying to tell myself I wasn't a little kid anymore, and there was nothing to be scared of. But as the cottage door creaked open, and Granddad's large shadow fell over me, I couldn't stop my heart from beating a little harder in my chest. Granddad's cottage was old. The ceilings were low and the furniture was minimal. The carpets were moth-eaten, ancient things that seemed to kick up tiny clouds of dust whenever you put a foot on them. The bathroom had black mold rising up the wallpaper. The paper itself was damp and flaking, and had peeled away to the stone in some areas. Entering the room felt like stepping into a cave. My bedroom wasn't much better. It was right at the back of the house, and it had only three pieces of furniture: an oak chest of drawers, a dilapidated wardrobe, and a single bed in the corner. I remember my heart sinking the minute I set eyes on it. Oddly, even though I can picture Granddad's house clearly enough, I don't remember much about how I spent my days there, especially during the first visit. I think we mainly kept out of each other's way. Granddad would be in the lounge watching TV or reading, and I'd be in my room on my phone, making the most of the one bar of 4G I could find in the cottage. I can't remember if we spoke to each other much, or what we said if we did. Mostly it's a blur. What I do remember are the nights. The first night in particular. I told Granddad I was tired and that I was going to head to bed early. He grunted something in response. Then I spent a bit of time in my room on Snapchat and YouTube, the videos taking painfully long to load, before heading to sleep. I woke sometime in the night. The cottage was silent around me. I could hear the leaves of the birch tree rustling in the wind in the back garden, but that was all. Moonlight spilled through a gap in the curtains. I leaned over to check my phone and saw that the time was a little after 2 a.m. For some reason, I felt wide awake. My heart was beating hard in my chest, and a film of sweat coated my forehead, as if I'd woken suddenly from a nightmare. But if I had, I couldn't remember it. I tried to relax, tried to lie back and let sleep wash over me again. But in Granddad's cottage, relaxing wasn't an easy thing to do. At first, I'd be able to hear the tree outside the window, but as I lay there on the pillow, staring into the darkness, I began to hear other noises too. The soft creak of a floorboard, faint taps, a distant rattling, which I assumed had to be pipes in the wall, and other sounds as well. Sounds I found it harder to place. At one point, I heard something that sounded like a faint snuffling noise, coming from the back garden. Some kind of animal. But when I sat up in bed and strained my ears, all I could hear was the wind. "Get a damn grip," I told myself. "You're 13 years old, not a little kid anymore." It was easier said than done, but I managed it eventually. I don't know how long I lay in the dark for, but after a while, tiredness finally got the better of me. My mind began to settle. I felt myself slowly drifting off. Only to jerk suddenly awake again when I heard a noise outside my room. A soft, deliberate creak, loud and clear in the darkness. I turned over in bed, trying not to make a sound. My heart hammered in my chest. I pulled the covers down from my face slightly, positioning myself so I could peek over them, so I could see the bedroom door. And as I stared at it, feeling like I was 5 years old again, I saw the handle begin to turn. I squinted my eyes shut. I don't know what thought was going through my mind, but right then I reverted to an age-old tactic, pretending to be asleep, playing dead. I could still see through a crack in my eyelids, but now the room was blurry, as well as dark. I lay as still as possible, trying to keep my breathing normal. For a few seconds, nothing happened. There were no more sounds. And then, just as I was beginning to think I might have imagined it all, the door swung inwards. Granddad stood in the frame. I couldn't make out his face, but I recognized his towering bulk. He was standing completely still, filling the doorway top to bottom, breathing heavily in the silence. "He's just checking on you," I told myself. "He's come to check that you're okay, that's all." But even as the thought went through my head, I saw something that made my blood turn cold. I saw something that made me suck in a sharp breath and tense my entire body below the covers. The shape of Granddad's head was wrong. It was all wrong, even in the blurry shadows. The wrongness was unmistakable. His silhouette bulged out in strange places, bulking out around the lower half of his face in a way I couldn't understand. I opened my eyes another fraction of an inch, unable to help myself, and what I saw did nothing to quiet the fear swirling in my chest. Granddad was wearing a mask. A black mask. It covered the lower half of his face, allowing space for the top of his eyes to peer over at me. The mask covered his mouth and nose, with multiple straps on each side, stretching around his cheeks to the back of his head. It looked like one of those pollution masks people sometimes wore in big cities. I snapped my eyes fully shut, forced myself to breathe in, then out, then in again. Nice and slow. I kept my eyes strained for the sound of Granddad's feet on my bedroom floor, but it never came. After a while later, I heard the soft squeak of the door shutting and his footsteps receding down the hall. We never spoke about him coming into my room. I never mentioned it to Granddad, and he never said anything about it to me. I never told anyone else either. I thought about telling Mom or Dad after the first visit, but in the end I kept quiet. Partly because I was so happy to be home again, I think. But mostly because the memory had taken on a strange quality by that point. It was like an old, half-forgotten nightmare. I could still picture it. But the fear I'd felt at the time had faded. It was as though the whole thing had happened to someone else. The feeling didn't last, though. Next month, Mom got ill again, and I was packed back off to Granddad's cottage. I protested harder that time, but Dad still wouldn't bend. He just told me to stop being selfish and to give my mom some space so she could get better. Wouldn't look at me as he said it. And once again, when I stayed at Granddad's cottage, he came to my room. Stood in the shadows of the doorway, the same black mask on his face. He never touched me or anything, I don't want you to think that. This isn't that kind of story. He simply stood on the threshold of my room, on the edge of the moonlight, staring in at me. Then, after a while, he'd leave again. The ritual happened every time I visited. It's been happening each month for the past 3 years. And it was only yesterday that I finally learned the truth. Only yesterday, when all the pieces clicked into place at last. Around my 16th birthday, I began to get ill. Weak and tired with no energy. Hungry all the time. I got this prickly rash on my body too, and my muscles and bones constantly seemed to ache. It was summer, so there was no school, and I stayed in bed all day, falling in and out of a broken sleep, dreaming. The dreams were vivid and strange. In them it was nighttime and I was running, sprinting through the woods as fast as I could, faster than I'd ever gone before in my life. The moon hung overhead in a purple-black sky, framing me like a spotlight. And at the end of each dream, I'd stumble out into a clearing. I'd see Granddad's cottage, and just as his front door began to creak open, I'd wake up in a cold sweat. Yesterday evening, Dad visited me in my room, came and sat beside my bed. He told me that Mum was ill too, and that he'd have to take her away for a few days. Told me to get lots of rest. But when I asked him what time he'd be coming home, he told me he wouldn't. Not for a few days, anyway. He said he'd be back when Mum was better, and in the meantime, Granddad was going to come round and look after me. That was when I finally lost it. I was too ill to get properly angry at him, but I did my best, screamed and yelled, told him I didn't want Granddad to come and stay with me. I wanted him and Mom. I accused him of abandoning me, said I hated him. He just sat on the chair beside my bed and took it. Listen to me without saying anything. The guy looked more tired and old in that moment than I'd ever seen him look before in my life. And when I was finally finished, when my throat was so raw I couldn't yell anymore, he said something to me. Something that started a conversation I'll never forget. I know you don't understand why I'm doing this right now, but you will soon. Granddad will explain everything. I sighed and laid back against my pillow. Exhausted. I don't want Granddad to explain anything, Dad. I want you here. I know you do, James, but I can't stay here. Not right now. It's not safe for me. I opened my eyes fully and stared at him, suddenly alarmed. What do you mean it's not safe? Am I contagious or something? No, no. He shook his head. It's nothing like that. It's just that I, at certain times of the month, I have to... He sighed again and looked back down at me, shook his head once more. It really is best if your grandfather explains all this, James. Your mother can help too when she's back. I might know more about it than most, but I don't really know. Not like them. I had the urge, almost overwhelming, to reach out and shake him. I didn't understand anything he was saying. What do they need to explain? I said. Can you please just tell me what the hell's going on? My dad sighed again. He stood up and walked over to my bedroom window, then peered out through the curtains. Big moon up there tonight, he said after a moment. Not even dark out and I can already see it. He stared through the glass for a while, then turned back again, turned to face me. James, you know how your mom gets poorly each month, he said. How she has to go away for a while until she's better. I nodded. Of course I knew. Okay. Well, the reason she has to go away is because she has this rare condition. It only flares up every once in a while, and it's easy enough to predict when it's going to happen. But that's the only thing about it you can predict. At her age, they can get, well, your mother finds it hard to do certain things, I suppose. She finds it hard to act in a certain way. What condition does she have? Your granddad will explain that better than me. Why will he explain it? Why can't you just tell me? Because he has it too. I don't understand why you can't... I paused, suddenly processing what my dad had just said. Wait, did you say granddad has it? Dad nodded. After a moment, he sat down on the end of my bed, ran a hand through his hair. It's genetic, James. Granddad has it, and your mom has it. And you have it as well. I stared at him, unsure I'd heard him correctly. I have? Yes, you do. It's not a bad condition exactly, but it's something that has to be managed carefully. Your granddad has lived with it for a long time, and he knows all about it. He'll be able to help you. Blood was pounding in my ears. Thoughts and memories were suddenly pressing at the edges of my mind like angry dogs. I pushed them away and focused on Dad. Is that why you started sending me to his house every month? So I got to know him better? So he could freaking help me with whatever the hell this is I've got? Dad stared at me with sadness in his eyes. It wasn't my idea, he said after a moment. Your mother said it was best. Granddad agreed with her. When you're coming of age, it's good if you can spend time with older ones of their... Well, like I said, your granddad can explain it. I bit back another urge to scream at him. I still didn't really understand what the hell he was talking about, or at least the main part of my mind didn't understand. At the same time, though, something was starting to nag at me. Images and memory circled the outskirts of my brain just out of sight. Monsters around a campfire. I swallowed. You said it wasn't safe for you, I said after a moment. When Mum gets ill, you said you can't be around her. Dad paused, then nodded his head. And what about Granddad? Are you safe around him? Dad opened his mouth and closed it again. He frowned. Your granddad's better at dealing with his symptoms, he said eventually. He's had longer to get used to them than your mother has, but no, I still wouldn't be safe. Not completely. So why was I safe? I exploded. Why did you ship me off to stay with him every month? Is that why I've caught this thing? No, I told you it's genetic. You're born with it. And besides, your grandfather would never hurt you. We took extra precautions on the worst nights, too. I insisted on it. We made sure you'd never. But my dad's voice was suddenly growing distant. The things circling my mind had grown close enough for me to see them at least. They came out of the shadows and were lit up by the flames. Exposed. A barrage of images and memories flew through my head in a blur. I remembered the times Mum had come home with scratches up her arms. I remembered the dream I'd had where I was running through the woods. I remember Granddad standing in the bedroom doorway in the cottage, the black mask covering his face. And in that moment, I realized something I'd never understood before. Something that filled me with a sickening combination of terror and excitement. The thing on Granddad's face hadn't been a mask after all. It was a muzzle. Don't let me catch you talking about werewolves. Granddad sat down on the edge of my bed. The mattress sagged beneath his weight. This isn't a bloody storybook. It'd been several hours since Dad left with Mum. I'd been sat up in my bed, watching the sky outside my window fade to black, watching as the glow from the moon grew brighter. When Granddad finally arrived half an hour ago, the headlights from his Land Rover spilling into our driveway, I felt a mixture of excitement and fear. the same way I'd felt when I was speaking to Dad earlier. In the time Granddad had been in my room, I'd already asked him what felt like 100 different questions, and we'd barely even scratched the surface. "So, you're not a werewolf then?" I forced myself to meet Granddad's gaze. His blue eyes stared back at me, bright and unblinking. After a moment, he looked away and sighed. "It's not a word anyone uses," he muttered. "I suppose there are similarities to what you're thinking of, but it's different. Not like in the films." "But you, we, whatever happens to us, it happens when the moon's full, right?" "Well, yes, and no, not exactly. It's..." Granddad frowned and paused for a moment. He stared down at my duvet, as if he could find an answer in it. Then he let out a sudden, throaty chuckle, grinned and shook his head. "I went through all of this with your mother, but I'm still no good at explaining it. It's like falling asleep in a way, moving between awake and sleeping, between different states. You can do it anytime you want, but it'll happen quicker if you're already tired. And if you're really tired, it's hard to avoid." I stared at Granddad, trying to understand what he meant. He must have seen the confusion on my face. "Sorry, lad, I'm not explaining myself well at all. What I mean is, we can change anytime we want. Older ones who've lived with it for years can change in a matter of minutes. But there are times of the month when the moon is at its fullest. I mean, when changing is a lot easier. Like how sleep comes easier when you're tired. And on the night it's completely full. The change can be... well, it can be almost impossible to control. Even when you're as old as I am." He smiled at me, but I didn't smile back. I was trying to concentrate on everything he'd been saying. Trying to take it all in. Questions were building in my head, and I didn't know which to ask first. "So, when you do change," I said after a moment, "when we change, what do we change into? What does it look like?" Granddad stared back at me. He was silent for a few moments before he opened his mouth to speak. "Well, you'll..." His sentence was cut off by the sound of a car passing on the road outside. Headlights flared in the darkness outside my window, then faded again. The noise of an engine briefly filled the room, dwindling as the car drove off into the distance. When I looked back at Granddad, I saw he was on his feet. He marched over to the window and frowned out into the darkness. "I knew we should have done this at the cottage," he muttered the words under his breath, but they were just loud enough for me to hear. "Stupid of me coming here." "Granddad?" "Hey, what do you mean, stupid? Why is it stupid?" Granddad glanced back at me. Thick frown lines traced his forehead. "It's nothing you need to worry about. I wanted your dad to bring you to my cottage, that's all. But the stubborn bastard wouldn't do it. Said you were too ill." "What's wrong with you coming here?" "It's risky, that's what." Any trace of a smile had gone from Granddad's face. "If you're going to learn about all this, you might as well learn that first. It's a risk, all of it. A constant struggle to stay hidden. And you don't get to be my age without making a few enemies, I'll tell you that." I stared past Granddad at the darkness beyond my bedroom window. Stared at the light of the moon. My body still ached, but for now a spike of adrenaline had made me forget the worst of it. I suddenly realized I'd never seen Granddad outside his cottage before. "What enemies?" I said after a moment. Are there people after you?" Granddad let out another low chuckle. This time there was no humor in it. "Not just me," he said. "The whole clan. There's always someone. Hunters out for a trophy, big companies, people wanting your skin, the government. We try our best to keep everything secret, but it's no good. People see things and people talk. It always gets out." Granddad reached out suddenly and tugged the curtains across my window shut. Blocked out the moonlight. He stood at the end of my bed, staring down at me. "If we're going to talk, we'll do it downstairs," he growled. "I'm not standing here like your bloody nursemaid." He turned and left the room before I had a chance to respond. We sat in the lounge opposite one another. Granddad in an armchair near the front door, me on the sofa, curtains drawn. Yellow light spilled down from the bulb overhead. A light rain had started outside, and it drummed against the window like a thousand soft fingers. Every now and then a car would pass by on the road, and each time Granddad's body would tense, just a little. He'd try to hide it, but I saw. I still felt ill. My body ached and my skin itched. I felt weak and tired. But for now, at least, I could almost forget about those things. Adrenaline, fear, and excitement swirled in my stomach. I wanted to ask Granddad about his mask and why he wasn't wearing it, but I was worried he'd get angry again, like he had in my room. I'd heard the temper in his voice then, and I didn't want to be on the receiving end of it. So instead I asked a different question. "Where does Mum go?" I asked. "When she's away each month, I mean. Where is she?" "She stays with a couple of friends of mine," said Granddad. "Old friends, part of the clan. They live in the New Forest, too, about 5 miles from me. They've helped me with her, helped me show her the ropes." "But why does she have to stay away? Why can't she do what you do?" Granddad fixed his blue eyes on mine, ran a hand through his thick white beard, scratching the skin underneath. "It takes a long, long time to get used to the change," he said after a moment. "I've lived with it for years, and even then your dad still wanted me to put that chuffing thing on my face when I was around you. Block out the smell on the worst nights." Granddad shook his head. "I didn't need it, and it pissed me off that he thought I might. But I let it go. I let it go because he sees your mother when she's in her other state, and he knows how bad it can get." "How bad it can get?" Granddad opened his mouth to reply, but at that moment another car engine sounded in the distance. He paused listening. The engine grew louder. After a few moments, I saw headlights illuminate the drawn curtains of the lounge window. The engine swelled as the car drove past the house. I heard the splash of wheels on wet tarmac. The engine faded as the car continued down the road. And then it suddenly cut off. Granddad froze. His face was set in a mask of concentration. After a moment, he cocked his head slightly to one side, presumably listening for the sound of the engine starting back up again. It didn't come. I listened too, and I couldn't hear a thing. Only the rain growing steadily heavier outside, pattering against the glass. Wind gusted around the house, causing the trees in our garden to rustle. "It's probably just one of our neighbors, Granddad," I said. "I think the car..." I stopped talking when Granddad held up a hand. He shook his head. The frown lines on his forehead were so deep now they looked like cuts. "No," he muttered after a moment. "Someone's coming." My skin suddenly felt cold. I had no reason to be afraid, but the tension on Granddad's face was rubbing off on me. I strained my ears for a sound, but I still couldn't hear anything. Only the rain. "Granddad, it's nothing," I whispered. "There's nobody out." Our garden gate creaked open. The sound was soft but clear. The familiar squeal of old hinges. It cut through the wind and rain. My skin prickled with an unpleasant heat, and my heartbeat picked up in my chest. Granddad was on his feet. He crept over to the little front door in the corner of our lounge, moving without making a sound. Our house is tidier than Granddad's cottage, but it's still almost as old. The ceilings are low. Standing just to the left of the front door, in the shadowy entrance to our dining room, Granddad had to crouch. Stood up straight, the top of his head would have touched the ceiling. The front door was smaller than he was. His blue eyes were fixed on the little square of frosted glass set in its center. I started to get up from the sofa, but he held out his hand again, motioned for me to stay where I was. A second later, I heard footsteps crunching across our gravel drive. I held my breath. Every inch of my skin prickled and itched. I stared at the little window on our front door, waiting to see movement on the far side of it, trying to tell myself I had nothing to be afraid of. It was probably just Dad. That was all. Dad coming back to pick something up. Maybe something he'd forgotten. It was a little strange that he hadn't parked the car right outside our house. But there had to be an explanation for that, didn't there? Who else would it be? As these thoughts rushed through my head, a shadow appeared on the far side of the frosted glass, a shape in the darkness. I held my breath again, feeling my heart pound my ribcage like a fist. For a second, nothing happened. And then someone was rapping their fist against the front door, over and over again. "Hello? Is anyone home?" It was a man's voice, not someone I recognized. "Hello? Can anyone help me, please? I saw a light on." Granddad stayed completely still. He stared at the door, his face unchanging. The knocking continued. After a moment, the man spoke again. His voice sounded close to panic. "Please, if someone's there, can I use your phone? Our car's broken down and we don't have any signal. Please, my wife isn't very well." Granddad hesitated for another second. Then he reached out and tugged the door open. From where I was sitting, I couldn't see the man in the porch, but I could hear everything he was saying clearly enough. "Oh, thank you so much. I'm so sorry to trouble you. We've had an absolute nightmare. Our car's broken down just a little way along the road, and my wife is unwell. She's 8 months pregnant, you see, and we're on our way to Bournemouth to visit friends. But my phone lost signal, and I was taking what I thought was a shortcut. Stupid of me, I know. And then we got this warning light on the dashboard a little while back, and I watched Granddad's face as the man babbled on and on. His expression was fixed and hard to read, but I thought at least some of the tension had gone out of it. "So if you have a mobile I could use or a landline," the man continued, "then I can make a very quick call to the AA, and I'll be out of your hair. I'm so sorry again for the intrusion. What's that in your hand?" Granddad's gruff voice cut through the man's rambling. I stared at his face, but his expression remained the same. "Oh, this is a walkie-talkie," said the man. "I may not be able to navigate to save my life, but I always worry about safety. Over-worry, actually. Paranoid, that's what my wife calls me. We ran out of petrol in the middle of nowhere once, and I've carried a pair of these in the car ever since, along with a first aid kit and some spare clothes, just in case, you know. You never know when these things might come in handy. In fact, that reminds me." He fell silent for a moment. A few seconds later, I heard a soft beeping sound. "Hi, sweetheart, it's me," he said. "A nice gentleman down the road has just opened the door, so I'll call the AA and be back as soon as possible, okay? Over." There was a faint crackling noise. After a moment, I heard the tiny sound of a woman's voice responding. "Okay, be as quick as you can," she said. "I'm really not feeling good, Tim." Over. "I will, sweetheart, I promise." Over. The crackling sound cut off. There was a moment of silence and then Granddad sighed. He looked weary, but any sign of the previous tension in his face had gone. "Right then, right. Come in then," he said. "You can use my phone, but you'd better make it quick. My grandson's not well either." He edged back away from the door. A moment later, the man stepped into the lounge. Any residual fear I may have felt vanished the minute I saw him. He was about half the size of Granddad. What was left of his thinning black hair was slicked down against his forehead from the rain. He wore glasses that were speckled with water drops. His raincoat dripped onto the carpet. As soon as he saw me, he raised a nervous hand in greeting and started babbling again. "Hi there, I'm Tim. Sorry to intrude. I just need to make a very quick call and I'll be out of your way again. My wife and I have had a nightmare this evening. Granddad shoved his mobile phone into the man's hand, cutting him off mid-flow. "There, you can use that." "Oh, perfect. Thank you so much." Tim looked up at my granddad with wide-eyed gratitude. "I'll be as quick as I can, I promise." He tapped at the screen of Granddad's phone, then raised it to his ear, smiled across at me, and I smiled back. Granddad hovered near him, watching. He didn't say anything else or look at me. After a few moments of waiting, Tim started babbling into the phone. "Hi. Yes, I'm Tim Ferris. Yes. I think we may need someone to come out and help us, I'm afraid. Yeah, we've had a bit of car trouble. We're out near..." Tim's voice droned on and on. After a minute of talking, he got his AA card out of his wallet and began reciting numbers. I began to grow aware of just how much my body was aching again. The adrenaline I'd felt earlier was fading, and I now had a hollow feeling in my stomach too, like I needed to eat. My skin itched, and I had to resist the urge to scratch my arms. To distract myself, I watched Granddad. He looked suddenly uncomfortable. He was standing in the same spot as before, staring at Tim, but now he was shuffling back and forth, like he couldn't keep still. He kept running a hand through his beard, his eyes never leaving Tim's face. When Tim finally hung up the phone and handed it back to Granddad, I felt a hard-to-place sense of relief. "Great, they're sending someone out now," Tim said. "They're going to call back in 5 minutes with an ETA. So sorry again about all of this, and do you mind if I wait for their call?" Granddad grunted in response. Tim turned to me and smiled. "And what did you say your name was, matey? Your granddad told me you're feeling a little bit under the weather?" I nodded. "I'm James," I said. "I've got the flu or something, I think." Tim frowned and nodded his head. "Nasty stuff, nasty stuff. Something's going around at the moment, so is it just the two of you here tonight then? Mom and Dad not about?" I opened my mouth to reply, then paused, tried to think what was best to say. I couldn't tell the man where Mom and Dad really were, but at the same time, I couldn't just ignore the question. I glanced over at Granddad, but he was frowning down at the phone in his hand, not listening. They're out tonight, I said after a moment. They've gone out for a meal in town. Ah, very, very nice, very nice. Well, hopefully their car's a bit more reliable than mine, eh? Out for the whole night, are they? Tim smiled across the room. Outside the house, the wind gusted harder than ever. Rain drummed against the window in heavy sheets. I opened my mouth, unsure how best to respond. But before I had a chance, Granddad spoke. "Your call didn't go through." "Hmm?" Tim turned away from me and looked at Granddad. "The call you made just now, it didn't go through." "Sorry, how do you mean?" Granddad's blue eyes were fixed on Tim. He stared at him without blinking. "What I mean is the call you just made only lasted 3 seconds. It's right here in my log. You dialed a number, then ended the call almost straight away." "Why?" "Oh, sorry, I don't..." Tim trailed off and looked at Granddad. His eyes flicked from Granddad's face to the mobile phone in his hand, then back again. "That's bizarre," he said after a moment. "There must be some kind of mistake. I definitely got through to someone. Maybe your phone didn't record it properly, or... Well, are you sure you're looking at the right..." "I know exactly what I'm looking at. The call didn't go through, which means you were only pretending to speak on the phone just now, and I want you to tell me why." Tim stared at my granddad. He opened his mouth and closed it again. Wind howled across the eaves of the house. Rain continued to drum down. There was a beat when everything inside was still, and the only noise I could hear was my own heartbeat. Then everything happened at once. Tim raised the walkie-talkie to his mouth and pushed the button. He backed away across the lounge towards the front door, bellowing into the mouthpiece as he moved. "Now, go now, the kid's here too, and..." It was as far as he got. Granddad's hand shot out and swiped the walkie-talkie from Tim's grip. It smashed against the wall of the lounge and fell to the carpet, where it cracked and fell silent. Granddad moved quicker than I thought was possible. He closed the distance between himself and Tim in one large step, gripping the man's head in two large hands. Tim's glasses went tumbling off his face. He screamed. The sound cut off as Granddad jerked his hand sharply to the right, snapping Tim's neck in one clean motion. He released his grip, and Tim crumpled to the floor. On the road outside, I heard the distant sound of a car engine starting. Granddad turned to stare at me, his blue eyes blazing. "Get up," he said. "We have to get out of here. Right now." I sat on the sofa, frozen, struggling to comprehend what I'd just seen. Granddad didn't wait. He crossed the distance between us in two large steps and hauled me to my feet, dragging me across the lounge towards the front door. I was only wearing pajama bottoms and a top, no shoes. But if Granddad could hear my protests or my questions, he ignored them. We stepped over Tim's crumpled body, and I caught a quick glimpse of his rain-spattered face, his glasses off, and his eyes wide open, before we reached the front door. Granddad tugged it open, and we ran out into the night. Rain hammered down around us. I was soaked almost immediately, the material of my top sticking to me like a second skin. The wind howled through the garden. The sound was so loud it seemed to block out everything else. I tried to listen for the noise of the car engine I'd heard starting up a moment ago, but I could no longer hear it. Stone stuck to the soles of my feet as we crossed the gravel driveway. I gritted my teeth against the pain. My heart was racing in my chest harder than ever. I wanted to ask Granddad what was happening, ask him who that man was that he'd just killed, but there was no time. Everything was happening too quickly. Within seconds, we were through the open garden gate and onto the country lane beyond. Trees and bushes crashed around us. My entire body felt numb. Granddad tugged me to the left, pulling me in the direction of his Land Rover. The rest of the lane was pitch black, with no sign of any other cars. Granddad fumbled with his keys out of his pocket, dropped them onto the gravel at his feet. He cursed, then picked them up, shoved me in the direction of the passenger door. I ran around and tugged it open a second after he'd unlocked the car. But as he was pulling the driver's door open, I saw something moving across his chest. A tiny, red dot of light. Granddad! He ignored my previous shouts, but he didn't ignore this one. Must have heard something in my voice. Without looking at me, he ducked, instinctively, and a split second later I heard a sharp cracking sound cut through the howl of the wind. The Land Rover's wing mirror exploded. Glass smashed and went everywhere. It sprayed out from the shattered mirror and disappeared among the rain. "Damn it!" Granddad's voice was a hoarse yell. "In the Land Rover, and stay down, now!" I dived through the open door and shut it behind me. Stayed sat in a crouch. A second later, Granddad was climbing in beside me, stabbing the keys into the ignition. The second shot rang out as he was starting the engine. It pierced through the Land Rover's back window and punctured the windshield in front of us, cracking the glass. Granddad yanked the handbrake down and shoved the gear stick into first as the third shot rang out. I heard it crack and roll through the darkness, but it didn't hit us. Granddad floored the accelerator. The Land Rover's tires bit into the gravel and we drove away, just as the fourth and final shot pierced the darkness. Granddad screamed. The Land Rover jerked to the right for a moment, but somehow he managed to drag it back on course. I turned to stare at him and saw him clutching his left shoulder, one hand on the wheel. Blood was pouring down his arm. "Granddad! Granddad, are you—" "I'm fine," he spoke through gritted teeth without looking at me. "Just keep your bloody head down." We drove in silence. A couple of times I opened my mouth to ask Granddad a question, but I couldn't find the words. I just kept shooting glances at him instead. Every time I did, he looked a little worse. Granddad's face was lined and pale. He gripped the steering wheel tight with one hand, the other still pressed to the wound in his arm. His entire sleeve was stained brown. His hand was a red, bloody mess. He drove quickly, blue eyes fixed on the country roads in front of us, not speaking or looking at me. For my own part, I felt terrible. My entire body was trembling. The heat was on in the Land Rover and turned up high, but it was no good. My skin was rain-soaked and freezing. I felt like I had a fever. My teeth chattered lightly together, and I couldn't get warm. Finally, after half an hour of driving in silence, I forced myself to speak. "Granddad, where are we going?" He didn't turn his head, kept his blue eyes fixed on the road. Just as I was beginning to think he wouldn't respond at all, he barked out a single word. "Cottage." "But are you going to be okay? Shouldn't we—" I stopped myself before I could say go to hospital. Of course we wouldn't go to the hospital. Granddad had been shot in the arm, and a few minutes before that he'd killed a man with his bare hands. Hospital with a bullet wound meant the police would be called. It was the last place we could go. Without looking at me, Granddad grimaced and nodded his head once. I kept my eyes on him as I asked my final question. Can't you change, Granddad? If they keep coming after us, can't you change into your other form? Granddad blinked his eyes shut, then opened them again. Kept them fixed on the road ahead, he muttered the same word he'd spoken earlier, only quieter this time. Almost a whisper. Cottage. I supported Granddad to the front door. The weight of his large body slumped against mine was impossibly heavy. When he first stumbled out of the Land Rover, I almost dropped him, but together we just managed to stay upright. The Land Rover's door remained open, and I didn't go back to shut it. Rain cascaded down around us. It was a torrent now. I squinted my eyes shut against it, felt the cold water pour down my face. The hair stuck to my forehead in wet clumps. I could no longer feel my feet. My body felt impossibly weak, like I was on the verge of collapse. But somehow I forced myself to keep going. Granddad took a lot longer to unlock his front door than he had the Land Rover. His hand was shaking badly. He kept missing the lock. He slotted the key in eventually, though, and we stumbled over the threshold of his cottage. I slammed the door behind us and flicked the light switch. We stood in Granddad's cluttered front room. His cottage had a similar layout to my house. The front door opened straight into the lounge, with two other doors leading deeper into the house. A tiny kitchen could be assessed at the far end of the room. Beyond that was a back door that led out into the rear garden. To the left was a door that led to the hallway, and onto the bathroom and two bedrooms. The lounge itself was dusty and bare. There was an old sofa, an even older television set, and a little window. Not much else. Granddad, do you want to lie down? I can help you to your room. Granddad shook his head. His lips were pressed tightly together. Staring at him, I felt a horrible sinking feeling in my stomach. He looked terrible. His face was ghostly pale, as if all the blood had drained from it. I thought maybe it had. The shirt sleeve of his left arm was completely brown, and the hand he'd been using to cover the bullet wound was bright red. The sight of it made me feel ill. As I watched, Granddad limped forwards and sat down heavily on the sofa. He reached up with his good hand, fumbling with the top button of his shirt. Help me, he growled. Need to get this off. Granddad's sentences were stilted, as though every word was a struggle. I hurried forwards and began unbuttoning his shirt for him. My hands were numb and I worked slowly, but I got there in the end. Once it was done, Granddad waved me away. He struggled free of the shirt, his face a mask of pain. Granddad's chest was broad and sinewy. Coarse white hair coated his torso. He shrugged his right arm free first, saving his injured left arm until the end. When he peeled the sleeve away, he let out a growl of pain. Then he dropped his shirt to the floor and opened his blue eyes wide, stared up at me. Don't be scared, he squeezed the words out through gritted teeth. My eyes kept flicking between his face and his bloody left arm. I won't hurt you. I opened my mouth to respond, but before I could, Granddad let out a loud groan. He started breathing fast and deep, tugging air into his lungs. He squinted his eyes shut, then opened them again, stared up at the ceiling. He let out another groan of pain, gritting his teeth harder. As the sound tapered off, I heard a noise outside. Cars. Two of them. Their engines were nearly obscured by the wind and the rain, but not completely. Their revs cut through the night air. I felt terror flare in my chest like fire. I stood frozen, staring from Granddad to the little lounge window. It stared back at me like a dark eye. A few moments later, I heard the sound of tires crunching across gravel.
Granddad! Granddad, they're here!
He didn't hear me. Maybe he couldn't. His face was a mask of agony. His eyes had rolled back into their sockets and thick veins stood out of his forehead. Similar veins covered his shoulders and his entire chest.
Granddad?
I was about to step forward and shake him when he let out a howl of rage and pain. His body suddenly sagged back into the sofa. He began panting hard. His blue eyes rolled back down and found mine.
Can't do it.
He heaved the words out between heavy breaths. The veins had disappeared from his face, leaving him paler than ever.
Damn bullet. Granddad, they're here.
I stared at his face, heard the panic in my own voice. Granddad must have heard it too. His blue eyes widened a fraction, and he turned towards the closed front door. A split second later, a hole was blown in it. I collapsed to the floor, covering my head. My ears rang with a cracking sound that filled the entire room. It rolled and echoed away into the night. The hole in my granddad's front door was the size of a dinner plate. From my position on the floor, I could see shards of exploded wood floating through the air, suspended in the light like dust motes. The door blew inwards on the wind, banging hard against the wall. Beyond it lay in the darkness of Granddad's front garden, and nothing else. I pushed myself up to my hands and knees. My heart was pounding in my ears. Adrenaline pulsed through my body like poison. I lifted my head, turning my eyes to look for Granddad. He was back on his feet. His face was whiter than ever, but his blue eyes looked sharp, alert. He was crouched beside the sofa, his entire body tense, muscles standing out like ropes. Without taking his eyes off the front door, Granddad ran across the lounge in a crouch. His footsteps hardly made a sound. He reached the wall just to the left of the open lounge door and turned to brace his back against it. His eyes found mine. Back. Back. Granddad didn't say the words, only mouthed them and gestured with his hands. But I understood. I shuffled backwards across the floor until my body was pressed up against the side of the sofa, half hidden from view. By peeking my head around the side of it, I could still see Granddad in the open front door. Granddad gestured with his hand again, telling me to fall back even further. But before I had a chance, a man appeared in the doorway. My breath caught in my throat. The man in the doorway was tall and broad. Not as big as Granddad, but close. Probably around Granddad's age. Stubble covered his face and his dark eyes darted back and forth across the room. His hands held a shotgun. The man took a step forwards into the lounge, and two things happened at the same time. The first was that his eyes found mine. I saw them widen slightly, saw his arms stiffen as he swung the shotgun's barrel in my direction. The man was quick, but my granddad was quicker. He sprang forwards from his hiding place beside the door, uninjured arms stretched out in front of him. The man didn't stand a chance. He caught movement from the corner of his eye at the last minute, but before he'd even started turning, Granddad was on him. He caught the man's face in one large palm and slammed his head back into the wall. It connected with a sickening crunch. The man went limp. His shotgun dropped to the floor, and his flailing leg kicked it as he slumped to the ground. The gun skidded a few meters and came to a stop in the middle of the lounge. Granddad turned to move towards it. His teeth were drawn back from his lips in a grimace. His eyes blazed with pain and rage. He was reaching down towards the gun, his good hand stretched out in front of him, when the second man appeared in the doorway. He was younger than the first man, but just as big. Sodden brown hair hung down over his eyes. He entered the lounge at a half run, a rifle slung over his shoulder. Panic on his face, his eyes found Granddad, and he skidded to a stop, already unslinging the gun.
Granddad!
He didn't need me to shout. He'd already heard the man behind him. He grabbed the shotgun from the floor by the barrel, spinning on the spot as soon as he had a grip on it. But this time, he wasn't quick enough. By the time Granddad had turned, the man had his finger on the rifle's trigger. The gun went off. The noise in the cottage was deafening. Pain stabbed through my head and my ears rang. I screamed with terror. Somewhere, Granddad was screaming too. I opened my eyes and saw him tussling with the man. He had the barrel of the rifle clutched in his left hand, while his right sought the man's throat. The shotgun was on the floor by his feet. The man swung wild punches into the side of Granddad's head with his free hand, yelling and swearing. Granddad couldn't get a grip on the man's throat. His hand was wet with blood. After a moment, I saw his hand travel up to the man's face and grab the back of his head. The man tried to thrash and get away, but he couldn't. Granddad's grip was too strong. He tensed his hand, bracing his fingers against the back of the man's skull, and pushed a thumb into his eye. The man screamed. He stopped punching and immediately grabbed Granddad's hand, trying to pry it free of his face. I stood up into a crouch, my eyes on the shotgun near Granddad's feet. If I could just reach out and get it. But even as the thought went through my head, I heard movement behind me. From the back of the lounge, I turned and saw a red-headed woman standing a few feet away, just inside the door that led to the kitchen. She must have slipped in through the back. In her hands was something bright yellow and blue, gun-shaped, but not a gun. It almost looked like a toy. It wasn't, though. Even as I screamed a warning to Granddad, I saw her compressing the trigger. Saw two thin strings of metal go shooting from the gun toy's blue barrel. I turned my head in time to see them disappear into Granddad's back. His entire body went stiff. He lost his grip on the rifle. The man he'd been fighting jerked backwards away from him, then swung the rifle in a vicious upwards arc. Its butt smashed into Granddad's chin. He staggered backwards and turned on the spot, almost in slow motion. I had time to see that his left hip was now leaking blood, too, from where the rifle's second bullet must have hit him. I had time to see the veined agony on his face. Then he collapsed to the floor. His body twitched and spasmed. His eyes were closed. I screamed. Before I knew what I was doing, I was moving towards the man. Anger and terror raged through my head. I had no plan of action. The man's eyes flicked up at the sound of my scream. I saw him swing the rifle towards me, saw him fumbling in his top pocket for a fresh bullet. The gun's barrel stared at me like a black eye. Heat surged and pulsed through my body. The man started reloading the gun and I tensed myself, ready to spring forwards. But a split second before I did, the red-haired woman spoke. "Don't, Jim. Remember who we're here for." Her voice was soft and calm. She wasn't talking to me, but the sound made me hesitate all the same. Jim hesitated too. He turned his panicked face in her direction. Blood leaked from his swollen left eye. I followed his gaze and saw the woman moving towards me, a smile on her face. The silent chapter will pay more for him if he's alive. The woman pulled a long, silver knife from her pocket. Its blade glinted in the overhead light. Its handle was a smooth, shiny brown. She waved it at me, the smile on her face growing into a grin. "You're not going to give us any trouble now, are you, boy?" I glanced back at Jim to find him aiming the gun at me. Panic and dread filled my chest. I'd missed my opportunity. The woman's distraction had given him time to reload the rifle and center it at me. If I jumped at him now, I wouldn't get to him before he fired. The red-headed woman walked around the sofa. She stopped a few feet away. The grin was still fixed on her face, but I could see something in her eyes now. Something like hate or disgust. One side of her mouth curled up as she spoke. "Don't try anything stupid. You don't want to end up like dear old Granddad, do you?" She took another step forward, raising the knife in front of her, and then something on her face changed. She paused. cocked her head to one side as though she was listening out for something. The smile on her face faltered. A split second later, I realized why. I could hear a sound. It was distant, almost smothered by the wind and the rain, but it was getting clearer all the time, louder and closer with every second. A steady rhythmic crunching noise, footfalls, pounding across the gravel towards the cottage. Jim? The red-haired woman was no longer looking at me. She was staring at Jim with a frown on her face. I followed her gaze. Jim stared back at her, his face a mixture of panic and confusion. Suddenly the footfall stopped, cut off completely. Jim turned around wildly, staring from the lounge window to the open front door. Wind howled around the cottage. The rain continued its relentless drumbeat. The front door swung back and forth against the wall, knocking into it repeatedly. Bang, bang, bang. Nothing else. Sadie, do you think we should... Jim took a step towards the door as he spoke, but got no further. A black shadow reared over him. Something had appeared in the doorway that completely blocked out the sky beyond. A dark, towering shape. I caught a glimpse of thick black fur covering something vaguely humanoid before everything descended into chaos. The creature rushed forwards at a speed that didn't seem possible. It was all limbs and shadow. Jim screamed and raised his rifle towards it, but he didn't stand a chance. Before the gun was even halfway up, the creature had swiped one of its limbs across his face. Jim's screams cut off immediately. Blood sprayed from his head. He flew backwards into the wall of the lounge, striking it at least twice as hard as the first man had after Granddad shoved him. I heard a sharp crack that could only have been the sound of Jim's neck breaking. A second later, the rifle clattered to the floor. I didn't turn to see what had become of Jim. I couldn't. My eyes were locked on the creature that now stood panting in front of me. The creature that was staring at me through silvery blue eyes. I stared back at it, unable to look away. In some ways, it was like the werewolves I'd seen in films. Thick fur covered its entire body. Its face was snarled into a dog's snout. I caught flashes of a pink tongue inside a mouth, ringed by what seemed like hundreds of needle teeth. Its muzzle was bunched up in deep wrinkles. Pointed ears stuck up from the top of its skull. It was like the werewolves I'd seen. But it was different, too. Its shape was different. The creature in front of me was skinnier and much taller. It crouched down low in the cottage, but even hunched over its shoulders still grazed the ceiling. Its legs were extremely long and thin. Its arms extended almost to its knees, giving the thing a spider-like quality. Each limb ended in an elongated paw, all of which were clustered with dark talons. The one on its right paw dripped with Jim's blood. My mind absorbed the image in front of me in a split second, taking everything in. That was all the time I had. A fraction of a second later, the creature was howling in rage and moving towards me. Its steps were stilted and awkward. The thing moved like a broken puppet. It took a long step over Granddad's crumpled body, its eyes fixed in my direction. But before it could go any further, I felt something cold touch my throat. The sharp metal of a blade. Sadie's knife. She'd crept up behind me while I watched the creature attack Jim, and now she was panting in my ear, holding the knife so close that it touched my skin. "Take another step and I'll slit his throat." Sadie was no longer calm. She spoke loudly, but I could hear her voice shaking. The knife blade wobbled against the skin of my neck. "I mean it. I'll let him go, I promise, but you have to change back first, so I know you won't do anything to me." The creature let out a long, low growl. Every inch of my skin prickled. Rain and wind continued to howl around the cottage in a never-ending sheet of noise. Rain, wind, and something else. Something new, an impossibly faint whine in the distance. As I stared into the werewolf's silver blue eyes, I realized it was the sound of sirens. Sirens drawing closer. Someone had heard gunshots and called the police. I didn't think. I didn't have time to. Before anything else could happen, I twisted my head down and sank my teeth into Sadie's wrist. The taste of blood and sweat filled my mouth. Sadie screamed. She tried to yank her arm away, but I reached up and grabbed it, holding it in place, bit down harder. Sadie continued to scream, and I heard the clang of the knife dropping to the floor. I opened my eyes and saw the creature advancing towards us, a low growl rumbling in its throat. I released my grip on Sadie and stepped to one side. "No, no, no!" Sadie was backing away across the lounge, babbling. She had her hands raised in front of her. Her eyes were wide and terrified. "No, please, just let me go. Just let me go, and I swear I'll..." It was as far as she got. As the wolf drew level with me, it suddenly lunged forwards, both limbs stretched out towards Sadie. The weight of it threw her backwards onto the floor. She landed with a thump and a scream, the wolf on top of her. Her screams didn't last long. Within seconds, her cries had turned to a wet, gargling sound. A moment after that, they stopped altogether. I spat blood from my mouth and turned away. Caught sight of Granddad, his body still lying crumpled on the lounge floor, eyes still closed. All other thoughts left my mind as I ran over to him. His entire body was covered in blood. It leaked from his chin, as well as the bullet holes in his side and shoulder. At some point, Sadie had dropped her yellow-blue weapon, but its metal string still stuck into his back. I kicked them away, knelt beside him, and moved my hands from his chest to his neck, desperately feeling for a pulse, trying to see if his chest was moving. The sirens outside were louder now. They drowned out my thinking, filling my whole head. I felt like I might faint. My hands moved over Granddad's face, but they were covered in his blood now, slippery and wet. I couldn't see properly because my vision had blurred. I felt movement behind me, heavy thumping footsteps. A moment later, I heard a low growl and felt hot breath on the back of my neck. The creature pushed me to one side. It bent down and took a hold of Granddad in both its paws. I screamed and tried to fight it off, but it only ignored me. Just scooped his broken body up like a rag doll, then threw him over its shoulder, as if he weighed no more than a child. And then a second later, before I knew what was happening, it had grabbed hold of me too. It twisted me around so I was staring directly into its face. There are two things I remember most about the final part of that night. Two clear images. The first is the moonlight. This must have been shortly before I lost consciousness, after my body finally gave up on me, after we'd been running for what felt like hours. Fleeing Granddad's cottage and the sirens across rain-soaked fields, fleeing into the night. After an unknown amount of time, the rain finally began to stop, and the sky overhead started to clear. I was draped over one of the creature's shoulders, clinging to the fur of its back. Through my filmy, half-conscious gaze, I saw stars above us, winkling like eyes. In a moment after that, I felt moonlight on my skin. I saw the moon, giant and white in the sky, shining down on me like a spotlight. It made me feel warm. That image will stay with me for a long, long time. But the second image will stay with me even longer. The image of what I saw in Granddad's cottage. Shortly before the creature tossed me over its shoulder, before we started running, the image of the creature's face only inches away from mine when it twisted me around to face it, to stare directly into its silver blue eyes. Sirens were whistling in the background, mixing with the wind and the rain. Terror, adrenaline, and exhaustion swirled in my stomach like a storm cloud. But when I came face to face with the creature that had just butchered two people in front of me, I didn't feel afraid. I suddenly didn't feel any fear at all. Because as I stared at it, I realized I wasn't staring into the eyes of some unknowable monster. I was looking at my own mother.